Okay, you're all set, Mr. Waters?
Yes.
All right, here we go. John, you once said that your job is to get up in the morning, think of something messed up, and figure out in the afternoon how to make money from that. I'm curious, is that where the idea to hitchhike across America came from?
Sort of. I used a word ruder than messed up, but
I know.
It was. I did hitchhike a lot as a kid. I hitchhiked a lot in the last 10 years in Provincetown, which was kind of trainer wheels. I take the bus always when I'm in San Francisco, which is kind of like closet hitchhiking because the people are so nuts on the bus.
Yeah.
So I just thought, it was a fantasy I had, a midlife crisis. What could I hitchhike across America by myself and what would happen? And so I sold the idea quicker than I ever would to the publisher. But then I knew that I wanted to, before I left, do some fictional things of what would be the fantasy of the very worst that could happen and the very best that could happen. So I wrote all them, which are very much like my movies, I think, in a way, before I did the real trip, and I wrote my death the day before I actually left to do it for real.
Yeah, and those are great. I didn't know that until I actually opened the book and started reading it, that what is he doing here? That it wasn't just the whole real trip. And I wondered, was part
of the real trip is the whole thing in it. The real trip is part three.
Oh, yeah. No, I realized that, but I was wondering if part of the motivation, John, for writing, imagining best case and worst case scenarios was just to kind of get yourself, your psyche ready to undergo this? Was it a way of calming anxiety and dealing with what you were about to undertake?
It was hoping and dreading put together, hoping for the best stuff and dreading the worst. And as it got closer and closer, it became more of an abstract idea that what a book deal is than the truth. And I saw the fear in my friends' faces. I saw the kind of reluctance to go along with it with the people that worked for me. So, and that started to make me nervous, which kind of got on my nerves because I thought, come on, let's be positive here.
Yeah, you've said that you are overscheduled and that you plan things weeks in advance. I'm curious, was that another reason why you wanted to do hitchhiking rather than something else? Did you see it as a chance to live a more improvisational, spontaneous life?
Yeah, you can't plan a hitchhiking trip, really. You can plan to not go off Route 70, which I did, but certainly you cannot plan how long it's going to take. You can't plan where you're going to stay. You can't plan how much you're going to get every day. Some days I only got, 20 miles, and other days I got, like, two whole states. So you can't plan it. You just have to take that chance and be in your own reality show, which it kind of was, or a fictional short story every time you got in a car. But while you waited, that was the incredible tedium and the incredible part of it that I forgot, even when I hitchhiked when I was young, that even in good hitchhiking places, it takes sometimes a long time to get picked up. And we figured out early that people that pick up hitchhikers, they never get up early because I never got a ride till the afternoon. And I would start early because I wanted as much daylight as I could get.
Of course, you want to cover as much ground. You want to make this trip from Baltimore to San Francisco go by as quickly as possible. Yeah. The golden age of hitchhiking is long gone. What happened to it?
I think what happened to it is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre hitchhiker, the Hitcher, the movie. Certainly, I bet there were always serial killers picking up people. I think it was probably always a little bit dangerous to hitchhike, but I think if you hitchhike, the chance of something horrible happen to you is much more probable you'll be in a car accident tomorrow than that happening. So everything's a little bit dangerous, and I think the danger of hitchhiking is a little bit of the appeal. It's always like a joke about sex to hitchhike. It's always a joke about danger. It's always the cliches of hitchhiking or genre movies.
Mm-hmm. And I wondered also, I kind of wondered if the danger is, as you say, it's part of the appeal. So I wondered if maybe you had somewhere in the back of your mind this vision of turning hitchhiking into the next big thing in extreme entertainment, along the lines of extreme kidnapping, which people pay to be abducted.
Yeah,
you could have John Waters extreme hitchhiking. You could even hire people to play scary drivers and pick up the clients.
No, I don't want that.
No,
I don't want to do that. I did imagine extreme drivers, certainly in the first part of the book, hideous ones.
Oh, exactly.
But I don't want to experience that for real. I like experiencing it in fiction. I was glad that everybody that picked me up was a good driver. Everybody had a cop. I had a coal miner, a trucker, a minister's wife, a African-American girl taking her baby to daycare. I had all kinds of people pick me up, and I would say maybe only a third knew who I was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hideous. Getting back to this idea of the most hideous hitchhiker that you could have was the worst-case scenario of Randy Packard. Can you tell me
who's a serial killer?
Randy Packard, yeah.
Yeah, who only kills cult movie directors. And, yeah. Because everybody said, well, they're serial killers. I said, yeah, I hate to say this, but they usually kill teenage girl runaway hookers, right? And that's a shame, but they don't usually kill 66-year-old men. Even the gay ones, there's one serial killer that was a gay one that just killed, but he went to gay bars and picked him up as a trucker all along the highway. So I tried to think what would be the serial killer that would get me, that would be attracted to me. So I wrote a chapter about Randy Packard, who was, I guess, my ultimate fear.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah.
He had a venereal disease I had never heard of that hadn't been discovered yet. On top of it.
Yeah, yeah, to make matters worse. And this would probably be the perfect time to have you read an excerpt from the Randy Packard chapter of your book.
Nobody told me I was going to do that. I don't even have the book.
Oh, you don't? Okay. I checked with Launch, and geez, I checked with her. Okay, we'll just skip that.
She never told me that.
No, geez. All right. Okay. So just before we talk to the reality, get back to the real story, which is part three of the book, I wanted to ask you about a favorite dream ride. You write about these people, these dream rides, the best possible case scenarios. Did you have a particular one? A favorite among them?
Well, I guess the first one, the one that picks me up and gives me $5 million to make the movie I've been trying to make in cash and tells me that there won't be any notes and he doesn't really care if he gets his money back or it makes money. And he's a pot dealer that has a corrupt FedEx office that's manned by people that look like they've escaped from the Whole Foods employee jail.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that look.
I know that look, yeah. So let's talk about reality now. You're hitchhiking from your hometown of Baltimore, Maryland, Maryland, I probably said it wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, to your apartment in San Francisco. What's your game plan? How long do you think it's going to take you?
I had no idea. I bought 5 pair of underwear, the worst pair I had to throw away pair each day. But 5 days is, if you drove, it would take 5 days. So I thought I gave myself 2 weeks. Thank God it didn't last that long. And it would have been torture because there were days when I was only in a car maybe 20 minutes of the whole day and standing there all day. But then you'd get a good ride. And I got some really long ones that were great. So I didn't know how long it was going to take, but I made it in time, certainly. I made it in nine days.
That's good, yeah. So we have to talk about signage. You wanted to go old school, cardboard signs. Why?
Well, it works. I think it's your ad campaign.
Yeah.
Although people think you're a beggar because the only time they see anybody now with a cardboard sign is when you were standing at a red light begging money. So I thought I was so stupid or so schizophrenic that I didn't know that you should stand at red lights. Like, how would I collect change down on the entrance ramp? Like, people run by and hold a basket and they throw quarters at me.
Yeah.
That would have been good. I should have tried that.
Should have, yeah. Next time. So
the human toll booth. No, set up my own toll booth and see if it worked.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you wrote different things on the signs. Was there, which worked best?
I found out the humor didn't work. I had one that said, I'm not psycho. Yeah. And people laughed, but they didn't pick me up.
Yeah.
And my job is not to warm up the crowd on their way to work in the morning in their cars. You know, it's a comedy routine.
No.
I'm writing a hitchhiking book that never worked except for cops. That kept the cops away. If I saw a cop, I'd pull that one out, and they didn't pull over much. But the ones that worked best are just the I-70 West. It was a long distance, but it wasn't impossible. I had it. I started in Baltimore with a sign that said San Francisco. People just laughed when they saw it because, and I don't know what would have been horrible if the book of one person had picked me up out and said, "I'm going to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Get in." It would have been a very dull book. I would have had to jump out. I would have had a escaper ride, which could be good.
That's good, yeah, and do the whole roll, the stunt double roll, the stuntman roll kind of thing.
I do that in the negative chapters when a junkie hag picks me up and throws me out.
Did you have a strategy if you didn't like the looks of someone who stopped to pick you up? Would you say thanks but no thanks, or is that a breach of hitchhiker etiquette, or did that never even happen to you?
Well, it never happened to me, but before you leave, you think, well, would I get in a car with, but the answer is once you're out there for 10 hours, you would get in with anybody. Freddy Krueger, that hitchhiker in the Chainsaw Massacre with a birthmark on his face, I would have gotten in his car.
Ted Bundy, wearing the sling, as you said, the arm and the fake sling.
Yeah. I'd get in anybody, anything.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, as you and I both know, you are John Waters. The titan of transgressive filmmaking, celebrated author, provocateur, raconteur, the pope of trash.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you.
My father didn't call me that.
No, not in front of you anyway. But this begs the question. Did people recognize you?
Some did, but a lot of them drove past me and said, is that John Morris? Why would it be him? Why would he be standing here? And just like I had a friend that read about it on the internet when the story leaked and called my office and said, so John's had a nervous breakdown. Well, I will come and get him wherever he is in the country. Just tell me, and I won't ask him any questions, and I'll bring him home. Thought that I had just lost my mind, which I hadn't quite.
Yeah, yeah.
So some people came over to give me money. A lot of people thought I was just homeless. And then some would recognize me. Then I start laughing and screaming and wanting to do photo shoots and everything. And some people, a lot of people didn't know who I was. And I'd try to tell them if they asked me. And one farmer I knew, he didn't believe me, just took out his wallet and tried to give me $10. And I guess that was because he didn't believe me, not that he saw the grosses of my last movie and was trying to help me in my movie career.
Yeah, and of course there was the one indie band that did recognize you, but they argued about it. They went to the next exit, and then they came back, and that kind of broke your cover because that went viral. And
yeah, they were great, though. They were wonderful. I was so glad show business people picked me up and that were used to touring. No, they had the right to do that, and it went viral, but it really didn't help me because the next they dropped me off somewhere. I don't know where I was. It wasn't like I could say, fans, come get me. I'm at exit 32, and, you know, where are the fans? They might not be in Indianapolis. So they were great, and it didn't hurt. I used that kind of to talk people into things on the way. I'd show them my cell phone and say, well, see, this is what I'm doing. But only once did I really use that to make it work.
Yeah, and was that the time in Indy where you got the woman who had booked your who had arranged your spoken
word?
Oh,
that was different.
Oh, that was different.
That was
when was the one time
I cheated a little?
Okay, when was the one time that it did work?
Which I'm sorry. What? Showing the thing on my phone. It was in Kansas when I was stuck in this rest area, and I was like, anytime somebody there was no one in the rest area, and every time someone would go in the bathroom, I'd run and stand outside the door like such a pervert when they would come out and ask them for a ride.
Yeah.
And this one kid at least stopped to talk, and I said he had never heard of me, and so I got my BlackBerry out and showed him the story that was on Spin and a lot of the magazines that I was hitchhiking. And so he at least believed me a little bit, but he still said no. He still said no. And then my assistant got on and talked to him. Then this trucker that was at the stop said, I'll give you a place. You can sleep in the bunk in the back with me. And I thought, oh, God, well, that'll be interesting. And finally, he did give me a ride, and he was great. He was going to a wedding, but he took me even like 40 miles further than he was going to get me a good rest area, a good place that had motels for the night.
Mm. Did you want to be recognized? Did it bother you when people didn't recognize you?
Oh, it didn't bother me, but in the beginning, I joked and said, I hope I wasn't. But as soon as I couldn't get a ride, I was praying. I was featuring my mustache. I was modeling it like Vanna White.
Yeah, yeah. And you actually brought along something you call a fame kit. Tell me about that.
Well, I bought it just in case I got in trouble with the police, that they would believe I was writing a book or something, and my assistant made it. And I think it just had some sort of article about when Hairspray won the Tonys with a picture of me. And then my Writers Guild of America card and Directors Guild of America card, which is ludicrous to think that that would give me immunity in some little town. And, you know, I get royalties from, you know, I'm voting the Oscars, so you really can't give me any trouble here. I'm a hitchhiker, elite hitchhiker.
Yeah.
But it did work. The cop started laughing, and he gave me a ride.
Hmm. One of the major characters in Karsak, besides yourself, of course, is the Corvette Kid. Can you tell me about him?
He was a Republican elected official. I think he's not anymore. I hope this didn't have anything to do with it. Who was in the pouring rain in Western Maryland, my third ride. He was going to the subway shop to get his breakfast. No, his lunch. And he picked me up. He didn't know who I was. I told him he had never seen any of the movies. Never heard. We just kept talking, and he drove me to Ohio, which was 4 hours away, and his parents were freaking. And then he went home, and then he kept saying, I'm going to come get you again. I thought he was kidding, and I'm getting stuck in Kansas, getting stuck in Ohio, hitchhiking, and taking days. And finally, I get this ride to Kansas. He said, you're kidding. I've been driving 48 hours at 80 miles an hour, and I almost caught up to you. And I thought, is he kidding? You know, so I said, well, meet me in Denver. And I thought maybe still he was home on his computer, that the whole thing was just kind of like a hacking exercise or just. But he was there, and he came, and we had a great adventure. We went over the Rockies. It was totally innocent, but people were incredibly perplexed by it, including his friends, who said things like, way to go. You're with a gay man in a hotel in Las Vegas, in Reno. What's going on here? And his parents were, I think, very freaked out by it because I'm not the best. If you're worried about your son running off with a hitchhiker and you look me up, it's not great, you know, from a parent's point of view. my career is not exactly who you want your kid to run off with. But it was totally innocent, and we just thought it was funny, kind of, that people were reacting so crazily.
Yeah. What was there? What did you guys have in common? Because he didn't know your work. He was a Republican and could still be. We don't know for sure. What were you able to bond over?
That we both were on an insane adventure. Okay. I was doing this insane stunt, and he ran away, basically. You know, he just joined my cult for a couple days.
Sure.
And was fun. We had a great time together. It was sort of father-son-ish, an alternative dysfunctional dad with a runaway kid who came back, not in his Corvette. He had his mother's Corvette in the beginning. He had his regular car when he came back.
Mm. Yeah, and you actually sent him ahead to your final destination, your apartment in San Francisco, right? And he was there waiting for you when you got there.
Yeah, because as we got near, I thought, you know, I need a couple more chapters of the book here. I don't want him to take me the whole way. Yeah. So I got out in Truckee, California, which is outside of Reno, and I just gave him the keys to my apartment, and he went there. And I finally, when I got there three or four rides later, he was just sitting in there with all the lights off. I think just scared to even turn the lights on. But he was great. He stayed. That's not in the book. He stayed for about 4 or 5 days afterwards. Mm-hmm. We went out to eat. We went shopping. But people, I don't know, that made it worse when he would tell his friends, they'd say, what are you doing? He said, you know, we're just going out to eat and shopping, which looked, you know, I said, Brett, you know what that looks like.
Yeah,
come
I know
on.
That.
You
know, yeah,
you got
to
realize. And we just laughed about it because it was so ridiculous. I mean, we went shopping in Macy's for Men, and I could see the salesman really thought Sugar Daddy was here with his, you know, chicken boyfriend. And then we looked all the clothes, and then he pulled out his credit card and paid for it, which I thought was great. I wanted him to buy me stuff. That would have really made the salesman crazy.
Yeah, that would have been nice, yeah. You've once said, and chances are you've said it more than once, that you're always waiting to be surprised, and that's something you're looking for every time you go to the movies. So I'm wondering, what was the biggest surprise you had during your undercover travel adventure?
I think definitely when the Corvette kid came back, because I couldn't believe that he drove all that distance to come back. Let me think. When people try to give me money, it was always astounding to me, so much that I didn't know what they were doing at first. Mm. I was so unexpected that, why are you handing me a $20 bill? So that was very moving to me, and these were poor people that were offering me money, pretty much. It wasn't like some rich person picked me up and said, here's $100.
Yeah.
So I don't know, just the kindness of people, how great they were. And I had imagined the extremes of sex and lunacy, adventure and everything, and all horrible people. I imagined a sports fanatic. I imagined being entrapped and busted in a bathroom in Kansas and going to prison. I imagine a food tamperer that's insane, that goes around poisoning people that I'm trapped with. Mm-hmm. A health food freak that gives me poisoned tofu and I get diarrhea. You know, that's a that's a fear when you're hitchhiking. Elimination is a problem.
Yeah, yeah. And that brings me to my next question. Throughout your adventure, you found yourself, as you say, creating these strange backstories for the people you encounter or would see. And you actually wonder, why do I have to turn everybody into a tawdry character? And that thought really struck me, because it makes me wonder, why do you have to do that? I think it's the
because
key.
I'm a writer.
Right, exactly.
And every writer, that's a writing exercise. I sit in airports and watch a plane debark, and I make up an instant 30-second biography of each person as they walk out of the plane. That's a writing exercise.
Yeah.
Because a tawdry character means, that doesn't mean they could be the hero or heroine of my movie. It could be a tawdry character. I always imagine drama and melodrama. And so all the characters that I think up are usually extreme in some ways. And so the real people I met were not so extreme. So that was kind of very eye-opening to me, to get along with people that were, I guess, so-called fairly normal compared to the characters that I write.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you would use the word tawdry. That's such a great John Waters word, because that really does capture it. And as I suspected, that is the key to your creative process, this whole wondering, imagining, and turning everybody into a tawdry character in your imagination.
Well, my mother, when she didn't used to like some people I'd bring home, she always would say, who is that creature? And I love that.
That's good. And, that's great.
And Jackie Kennedy, I read always, when she didn't like something, always just said, ghastly.
I've got to incorporate those into my vernacular. Thank you, John.
Yes, and my other favorite thing I heard is a Miss America that signed her autograph, lest you forget her name. That's what I really want to do. I have to do that on a sign. Yeah. Lest you forget, yeah. I am Miss America.
Yeah. You should add a lest you forget to those. Thank you for the lift cards. Thanks for the lift cards.
It's so hilarious.
It is, isn't it?
So grand to sign your autograph, lest you forget.
Yeah, especially coming from Miss America. So, John, what did you learn about yourself and other people from this whole experience?
I learned about myself that, hey, I can do this. I'm 66 years old. I got some street cred. I hitchhiked across America by myself. It wasn't easy. What I learned about other people, they trust you. They're open to hear what you want to say. And people want to help people, especially people that have gotten through something, have had some suffering, have had maybe some tragedy in their life. And they've turned it around and they still have a sense of humor. That's what's good. That's a sense of humor save you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are you able to live your life in a less scheduled, more improvisational way now? Has that helped? Has it helped you with that at all, this whole experience?
Not at all. I'm right back to full. I'm scheduled for the next year and a half already. I try to find calendars for 2016. I can't find them.
And but is that because you're hardwired to do that? You're so used to doing that?
I like doing that. Okay. I'm organized. Right. Okay. I don't work 7 days a week.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. You take Sundays off. Sundays are reading days, right?
Yeah. And yeah. Friday is drinking day.
Yeah.
I just drink one day a week and read one day a week and work the other five. That seems like a good schedule to me.
It seems like a great schedule. I'd say so, yeah. You actually put together a hitchhiking compilation music CD. I guess we could call it Music to Hitchhike By.
Well, I didn't put it on a CD.
Well, no,
but
I mean...
It's a playlist at the end of the book where you can go online and listen to all the music.
Yeah.
It's all hillbilly. Most hitchhiking songs are hillbilly music. Except Hitchhike by Marvin Gaye, the most famous one, really.
That's right.
So I just went through and did a lot of research and found great hitchhiking music that I always imagined would be playing with my fictitious characters in the book, where in reality, no one ever had the radio on. You would never hear anything because when you pick up a hitchhiker, somebody has to talk.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And you even had some songs. I was delighted to see Buzz Clifford's Babysitting Boogie made the playlist because that's a classic.
That's when I'm in a horrible car with somebody who I look up and I see an infant lying on the floor and a tarantula. And I said, you named your baby tarantula. It was not mine. And then I just realized it's an Amber Alert I'm in the middle of in the car. That's a harrowing ride. Right?
Yeah.
We throw the baby out the window, but it lands in another car safely.
Yeah, that's a classic story. Yeah. Is there one hitchhiking song from your playlist, John, that really captures the essence of this whole odyssey, this whole trip?
That's a good one. I guess, you know, there's one called, I don't have the playlist in front of me, but there's one, I'm a Hitchhiker from
Bobby Curtola?
Yeah.
My fellow Canadian, Bobby Curtola, absolutely.
You knew who he was?
Oh, sure, I'm Canadian. We have to know these things.
I know, but tell me who he is.
I didn't know about him. You know, he's like the poor man's Fabian, the poor man's Bobby Sherman.
But he had hits.
Yeah, in Canada, but what does that, you know, does that really count? You know,
Was that a hit in Canada?
I think it was. He's a little before my time even, but yeah, that was a hit. Anything, once someone like Bobby Curtola, you know, makes a name for himself in Canada, then, you know, anything he records is a hit. Oh, it's by Bobby.
But did he cross over? Did he come to America and have hits? Because I didn't know that song, and I knew a lot of obscure music like that.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know. You know a lot of stuff.
So he was like Fabian, Bobby V, that kind of...
Yeah, the Great White North version of those guys. Yeah, yeah, and I shouldn't diss them that much. I shouldn't because I'm not that familiar with this catalog. Oh yeah,
it's
it is for
song.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, John, hitchhikers are such a big part of popular culture. There are a lot of movies, and not all of them porn about hitchhikers. There's like the film noir, The Hitchhiker, that Ida Lupino directed, the horror film, The Hitcher, its recent remake. One of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes features a hitchhiker, and they show up in a lot in urban legends. Why do you think the archetype of the hitchhiker resonates with us?
Because it's dangerous and sexual. Mm-hmm. In all my movies, the hitchhiking scenes are terrible for the hitchhiker. In Pink Flamingos, they kidnap pregnant women that are hitchhiking and impregnate them. Kidnap women, impregnate them, and sell the babies. There's another scene in Pink Flamingos where somebody stops for a soldier. He runs up to get in, and then you pull away. Divine almost runs over a hitchhiker another scene. Let me think. Female Trouble, Divine is hitchhiking and is picked up by a rapist who's also played Divine, and there's a sex scene where he plays both parts with a double back and forth.
Yeah.
So the hitchhiking scenes, even in my own movie, are pretty hideous.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite fictional hitchhiker, either from one of your films or from movies or TV?
I think the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah. The hitchhiker with a birthmark is, anybody asks me what's my type, I say him.
That's great stuff. That's wonderful. That's all I had for questions about CARSIG, John. Thank you. That was wonderful.
Thank you.